Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today, once again, I'm joined by JP Mason and Declan McConville, where, gentlemen, there is plenty to discuss. Massive indication this morning that not only are we interested in or in discussions with Ange Postecoglou, but we are quite a way down the process of trying to appoint this man who only recently has been linked with the Celtic job. And in actual fact, on the back of the Eddie Howe job falling through. JP, what's your thoughts on the update today? The fact that he doesn't have his pro licence with UEFA, Celtic are able to make this recognition of competence procedure application, but that can take several weeks, following which, if it all goes through, that is, there's going to be a period of isolation when he comes into the country. What's your thoughts on this at this moment in time?
Are we dreaming? Is this reality? Like, this is so mental. It's absolutely insane. And do you know, I think it's weird how all this information is out in the public domain, and it's obviously, you know, not... You know, it's not fact. We don't know that this is fact. We're just, you know, it's Anthony Joseph that's put that information out there, and Stephen McGowan puts information out there. Like, why is all of this being fed out into the public domain? Like, how is this not conducted behind closed doors? Why is everybody and their dog able to know Celtic's business, you know, when it's not concluded? I find that unsettling. I don't really enjoy that fact, just the same way as I don't enjoy the fact that there was talk of podcasts getting the nod over the Howe deal before it actually was announced. Like, that's absurd. You know, there's a difference between a podcast being allowed, like ourselves or whoever, being allowed into a press conference to ask a question, but to be apparently being told that this information before it comes out into the public domain, I don't agree with that at all. And if there was anybody online sniping at that fact, then I agree with them. I don't think it's right. I know we will go on about acting like a big club. That is not acting like a big club. And with regards to the Postecoglou thing, I just think it's absolutely insane that they were pursuing somebody with so many hurdles to overcome to get into position, when you would like to think that there's easier options.
Well, that's a massive part of this, and I'll ask the question as to why we're going down that alleyway, which might end up to be a blind alleyway, because, you know, I've got to say I don't know much about the process in terms of the recognition of competence procedure. I don't know if it's a given, JP, if it's just a tick box exercise. I doubt that very much. It feels as though we're going for a player who needs to get a permit here. You know, it could take some time, and there's a whole process and there's hoops to jump through. But it looks to me, Declan, as though we're going down this alleyway, potentially a blind alleyway, due to the links between the fact that his club, YFM, we'll call them, are part of the City Group. And, you know, there is undoubted links between Peter Lowell and this deal having been done, or certainly started, with a team who are part owned by the City Group. Why are we continually going down alleyways like that, when, as JP says, there are other options out there where the negotiations wouldn't involve the issues with the pro licence?
It looks as though we just went for the simple option in terms of who we knew to sort us out, and that comes directly from Peter Lowell. I mean, we had a conversation just short of 100 days ago. It's 100 days since Neil Lennon left the club, about Enzo Maresca, about that tie to the City Group and Fergal Harkin and that whole idea that we would probably, you know, tap into that in terms of, you know, what Manchester City's got, the City Group that is, with Manchester City, New York City, Melbourne City, is that right? Over in Australia. And then they've got Yokohama Marinos, so they've got all these clubs, they've got their whole scout network, they've got obviously a different coaches. It's likely how the Ronnie Dyla deal came about, it's why he's at New York City after leaving Celtic. It just seems a bit crazy that we're just kind of depending on something that we've tried before, that, you know, for a want of a better term, it worked to an extent. Ronnie was successful, won two league championships and a league cup, but, you know, in terms of probably progress, the club to the what we wanted to achieve, we never really took that step forward with Ronnie Dyla for a number of different reasons. You know, senior pros in the dressing room undermining him, not getting to the Champions League 2 years in a row. But at that point, I think it's important to stress, at that point we were league champions when we appointed Ronnie Dyla. We just came off the back of 3 in a row, came off the back of 2 Champions League campaigns. At this point in time, we're coming off the back of not winning anything and going for what is another, you know, project, which is a big fear, because, you know, Ange Postecoglou, you know, he's had that experience of a Australia manager. I'm sure it's a big job in terms of he's qualified for World Cups and played in a big stage, but Celtic's going to be a very big, different challenge for him, and it's, you know, it is a worry.
It is a worry because on Monday, Tuesday, what we tried to do on A Celtic State of Mind is, and this is something that I think is in fairness and to try and offer a bit of balance, is we had almost a case for and a case against. And after speaking to Jared on Tuesday, I'm looking at, you know, Ange and his credentials and thinking, yeah, I understand why he is being looked at as being a manager who could make that transition. However, the timing, Declan, is my biggest concern. When, you know, going back to a point that JP made, on the one hand, as fans, we are constantly looking for information. We're in that, you know, generation now, Declan, where you need fed information constantly. That's why the newspaper print industry has basically fallen off the edge of a cliff, because you can't wait for the next day or for an evening edition. You need information as it happens several times a day. So on the one hand, that's what we're demanding as Celtic fans, and we feel as though we're not getting enough information. But then when the information comes out and the forms and the different sources that it's fed into, again, Celtic fans are feeling let down by that. But they're obviously on the button here. I mean, Anthony Joseph obviously has appeared on another show on A State of Mind, but he has broken the story today on Sky Sports. It could well be that they're in the camp, if you like, of Ange, and they're being fed information, they're doing their checks with UEFA. Does it concern you that all around us there is this frustration from Celtic fans that we're not getting any information on kind of like a direct basis? Because that doesn't seem to have changed a great deal throughout this entire process, has it?
No, it's not changed. And even in Friday's statement, it said an appointment would probably be imminent. We're nearly a week on from that statement and nothing. No update. This morning we're getting a away kit put out, which is quite nice. But, you know, in terms of communication, it's just 1 million miles apart, because on one hand we're getting a statement last Friday saying an announcement would be imminent, then we get a Harkin story breaks during the week when everybody kind of looks about themselves and go, what's going on? Then we get this today, once again two major stories, two big figures linked with the club, not coming directly from the club. You can't say an announcement is imminent, then a week on, nothing, and we're getting told by a Sky Sports journalist that we're going to need to possibly wait weeks for a pro licence. So, you know, it doesn't look as if anything's changed, which again is a concern, because we are in flux. It's 47 days to that first Champions League game. We've got a training camp in Wales coming up, and we don't know who's even going to be taking that with friendly games as well.
Yeah. Shambles. I mean, I've heard some of the examples even this morning from ex-Celtic players talking about, you know, just because you've not heard them, or you don't know much about the league in which he plays, it doesn't mean to say he's not good enough. And absolutely, I'm not going to be disrespectful to the manager or the league in which he plays. And, you know, various people have been appearing on podcasts to try and give you that insight into the platform that Ange has been performing on. And that's fair dues. I mean, that's what you would do. You know, you try and dig in, you try and investigate that wee bit further. But he's coming into an environment here that it's not as though he's just coming to any other European club. This is an environment where he's coming to a club where the demands are so high, JP, and in particular after the season we've just had. So I think Dec makes a tremendous point there. You know, when we appointed Ronnie Dyla, the timing was probably right to take a left field appointment, an experiment, a project. There's various ways we could describe that, but a wee bit more of a risk in bringing in Ronnie Dyla back then, but the timing was right. I don't think the timing is right at this moment in time, but it looks as though the club are going to charge forward with this appointment in any case.
It certainly does, given that's what the media is telling us, that's happening, you know. Who are we to say that that's nonsense? Obviously, the how thing rumbled on for so long and Celtic said nothing about it, nothing at all, until the point where they said, yeah, we've been speaking to Eddie Howe, you know, obviously it was agreed, and out with his control, we're out with our control, it's not happening. So all of the how stuff was then verified in that one short, weird statement from Celtic that left many questions rather than giving you answers, because everybody's sitting here wondering why did it not happen? You know, if it wasn't his fault and it wasn't our fault, whose fault was it? I'm not buying the backroom staff thing, because that just doesn't make any sense to me. Unless one thing that did come out of my head earlier on was that did the backroom staff look at the pandemic situation, see that Glasgow's still, well, I know we're about to go into level two, but we're in level three right now. Did they take that into consideration? I have no idea. And did that change their mind? I highly doubt it, because, you know, they're professionals and surely they need to work just like the rest of us. But yeah, the Postecoglou thing, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm going to dismiss what he's done. I've read and I've listened to, I listened to Jared talking. It was very informative. He also did say that, you know, he had his own preference for another coach, which was it Wagner, he said?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there you go. He's not exactly saying that Postecoglou is his number one choice. The other thing that Russell said was, and I agree with this, is what is it about Postecoglou that Celtic have discovered that no one else has. Do you know what I mean? And that's not being disparaging. It's just like, well, if he's that good, then why has nobody else made the effort to bring him over here, or, you know, and certainly into Europe? It just feels like it seems a little bit. I find it a little bit uneasy that we are this sort of dream weavers that have decided that he's the future of Celtic, and, you know, future is our focus and all the rest of it. It just doesn't quite sit. No, aye, exactly. It doesn't quite sit with me that's the case. And what I would also say is that beyond him becoming the coach, if that is what happens, it is then about what happens with regards to the recruitment, because that is the biggest thing. We obviously need to recruit players, and the level of our ambition will be dictated by the type of players and the amount of money that we spend on our first team going forward, regardless of the coach.
I just feel today there's so much to pick through. Even before we move on from Ange, there's still loads to discuss. Just yesterday, Declan, and I know people will be saying this is because I think I'm a friend of the Stars, because I've seen a lot of that on Twitter recently. I was chatting to Andy Lynch, former Celtic captain. And Andy, I don't know if this is on his kind of profile, but Andy did coach over in Australia. And he was talking about, you know, the kind of standard over there. So I found that quite interesting when Andy was telling me about the standard of Australian football when he was over there coaching. But he did say one thing that got me thinking, because, you know, maybe a few weeks ago, and perhaps this is because we were getting on, or we were definitely on the Eddie Howe bus at this stage. Andy says to me, and this was before the Netherlands result and the performance last night, Stevie Clark, that's the type of manager Celtic should be bringing in. We need a safe pair of hands, and we need this to be stabilised. And, you know, I can't disagree with that. And I don't think it's possible. I don't think he would take it anyway, Declan. But should we be looking for a manager more of that ilk? We're talking about timing. We need somebody to come in who knows the game, right? It's a much lesser risk. Every managerial appointment is a risk, a much lesser risk. And to come in and just steady the ship.
You know, Stevie Clark wouldn't be the worst appointment in the world. I think he's did an incredible job with Scotland, obviously being the first coach to get us to a major tournament for over 20 years. Brilliant achievement last night. Scotland played well. Again, just before that, he had a few poor results. So how he gets on at the Euros, I don't know whether that'll fare, whether he'll stay on at Scotland. You might think that he's did his bit and then possibly look to go back to the Premier League. Obviously did a very good job with Kelly. You know, I think, as you say, Paul, every manager would be a risk. There'd be a lesser risk with Steve Clark because he knows the league. But, you know, I'm just completely perplexed at this time. You know, with the Howe deal being so far down the line, as we were led to believe, and then it just collapsing at the very end, there must have been some, but I hope there was some kind of plan running alongside that Celtic can move quickly. Whether that has been the case, I don't know. You know, whether Stevie Clark or whoever else would maybe be better suited for the job, I don't know. But again, you go back a couple of years ago, Peter Lovell said we had a multitude of CVs and we just put them in the drawer. So where we go from that, I don't know.
Well, this again, it takes us to where we are just now. So we're looking at terms with Ange Postecoglou. We're talking to Yokohama Marinos in regards to negotiating a compensation, which again is another hurdle that JP mentioned before. There's hurdles all around this job here. So we're looking at compensation for the boss. But again, you know, we're looking at that Eddie Howe deal, and I think that the way that it transpired, I think there's been a knock-on effect on the Fergal Harkin appointment or interest, and I'll get back to that in a second. But surely, JP, when you're looking at the fact that we are only now entering into the process with UEFA in regards to the fact he doesn't have the requisite licence, so we're having to put through, you know, this request, and we're going to be basing it on 25 years of his managerial experience. We're only doing that now. Is that not indicative of the fact that we did actually have all our eggs in the Eddie Howe basket?
100%, yeah. I mean, if they had any foresight at all, then they would have done that. They would have started this process way back, so that it was at least, you know, because what harm would it do if he was granted that license and he didn't get the job? You know, you'd want to line up the ducks so that, you know, should the Howe thing not happen. And they must have known that the Howe thing wasn't going to happen. And in fact, I don't want to base things on Twitter or tweets, but a guy tweeted Anthony Haggerty and said that Neil Lennon was out golfing last Tuesday and got a text from Graham Souness to say that the Eddie Howe deal was dead. Now, that could be complete nonsense, but it seems a bit of a far-fetched thing to say, you know, unless there's some validity to it. So even if that isn't the case, I still believe Celtic knew the deal was dead early on last week. I don't think it just happened on Thursday or whatever day. That didn't just happen. You know, this thing had been dead for a while. So to suddenly go, yeah, we're in advanced talks with Ange Postecoglou, but we don't have the necessary license requirements for him to actually start the job when we need him to start it, which is, let's face it, yesterday. It definitely does look like everything was all in on, you know, all the chips all in on Howe, and then we went bust.
Now, the question remains then, JP, and I'll throw this one out to yourself, Dec. If that was the case, and it appears likely, otherwise we wouldn't be at the stage of, applying to UEFA to try and get this through, then obviously Ange Postecoglou is the backup. Do we have a backup to the backup? Now, we've seen a few names recently over the last couple of days coming through. Apparently, Rui Faria has been spoken to by Celtic. We know that Roy Keane and Nicky Butt have been spoken to by Celtic. But do we actually have negotiations going on elsewhere? Because this is so high risk, isn't it? I mean, what if the negotiations with his club break down in terms of a compensation package? What if the personal terms negotiations break down? Or what if UEFA don't grant us the requisite paperwork to allow him to come in and coach Celtic Football Club? There's so many high risk criteria that haven't been ticked off yet. Surely we have a backup to Ange Postecoglou. What do you think, Dec? Or am I just being far too naive in that assertion?
No, I think with everything that's went on in the past year, it's reasonable to ask these questions. And especially, I think, on Friday, if we had been doing our due diligence, so we're well down the line in terms of what you were saying earlier on, JP, about just getting that license made sure that's there just in case. That Friday and Monday, Tuesday, whenever, that would have been the time that would have shown that Celtic were prepared and had a plan B. That has become apparent. We're a week on nearly from that, and we're no further down the line. It looks as if we're all in now in Postecoglou, you know, but it likely means that whenever we go to Wales in a training camp, he probably won't be taking the team. And John Kennedy will likely be taking the team at that training camp, I'd imagine, if it does take weeks to get. So I think we're probably now all in Postecoglou, and it's a case of hoping to that goes on and comes through. And if it doesn't, I don't know where we go from there, because the quickness and speed, as I say, from last week of the Howe deal, if we had been running something alongside, if we'd have acted quickly and appointed somewhere, then we would have known that. But we've not. Still a week on. Saw that report today. I mean, I think it's all an imposter core glue. And if that fails again, we're looking elsewhere. And we probably do have somebody there. But whether we've got everything in check with them is another question.
See, the thing as well, JP, and this is not, I don't think, going to be music to the ears of many Celtic fans. We still have John Kennedy and Gavin Strachan in place. They are working at the moment in relation to setting up pre-season and everything that entails. We've got a number of fixtures. The first one against Sheffield Wednesday, I think now, is 34 days away. 47 days away is the first Champions League qualifier, potentially. So pre-season, obviously not all the players are going to be back for the pre-season, first day of pre-season training due to the Euros. But we don't have the time. So I'm thinking about the scenario where Ange Postecoglou comes in. He's not going to have the same kind of leeway or freedom that Eddie Howe was given. And I'll come back to that in a second, because I think that's been connected to the Fergal Harkin deal breaking down. He's coming into a situation where he's going to have a backroom team ready-made for him. And that's the backroom team who are currently in their position. So John Kennedy is still the interim manager at Celtic Football Club. Strachan and Stephen Kennedy's already making up the numbers. So if he was to come in and that's his backroom team, are Celtic actually looking at this situation and thinking, well, it may take longer than expected, but it's okay because we've got John Kennedy to look after it? Are we going to see John Kennedy in charge of Celtic for that first game in 47 days' time?
And there's a high chance. And I think I was speaking to my pal this morning, and he thought that maybe it was the case that if someone in the dugout has that license, then you can still actually function as a coaching team. So if John Kennedy does have that license, I presume he does, then Postecoglou could perceivably be in the dugout with him, but not actually be, you know, contravening any rules or anything like that. So I just find it absolutely baffling that we're talking about this. And you know, I don't want to be critical of Postecoglou, but one of the things that I heard he said was that he's happy to work with a coaching team provided they quote unquote share the same vision as him. I'm not into that. I'm sorry, I'm not into that at all. I just don't get that at all. I mean, it just doesn't fill you with any comfort that someone's just willing to just yield like that. You know, I know that he's obviously quite a bullish figure, and you know, he's stood up to media over there in Australia, and you know, taking a few numbers, to say the least, from what I've heard. But that's too integral a part, and it almost feels like it's too convenient for Celtic to be like, oh right, you'll work with anybody, cool, here's your guys, you know. And there's no unit, there's no harmony, it's not with it where we wanted to set off. It's everything that we said was wrong with the Lennon appointment and the fact that he didn't get to choose his own coaching staff, but then you've got a guy coming in that's happy with that as well. Doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't, and it was something we were very critical of all season, JP, especially when things started to go wrong. Neil Lennon looked isolated on the sidelines, didn't he? That wasn't his backroom team. You don't have that same dynamic. You just don't have that same working partnership. Messages coming in thick and fast. Patrick Murphy on YouTube. Remember, if you are watching on YouTube, get subscribing. We're up at 12,000 subscribers, but our target's much higher than that. The future is our focus. There's the hashtag. For a long time, I felt the idea that we're run professionally was a myth and was masked by domestic success. Now we're in a crisis with no clue what to do. Bankier out. Now, the reason I'm bringing this one up from Patrick Murphy, Declan, is I feel that we all know who the decision makers are at Celtic. We know that Peter Lawwell, Dermot Desmond, but there is a whole process in relation to the involvement and the influence and the responsibility of others within that boardroom. Ian Bankier seems to get an easy ride of it a lot of the time, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's the chairman of the football club and isn't, you know, he's not been really seen bar rocking up to Celtic Park and sitting in his comfy seat with his mask on. He does seem to get an easy ride of it, and how much his involvement is. I mean, he's in a very tidy wage, I'm sure, at the club, and in terms of how much his involvement is, I don't have a clue, you know. It's almost as if Peter and Dermot call the shots and everybody in the boardroom just nods along and, yep, we'll go with that. So, yeah, it does seem to get an easy ride of it, but, you know, in times of trouble, I think you can usually see how good a functioning board should act, and they've not certainly did that. They've not covered themselves in glory at all through this process.
Now, Facebook comments coming in from Gary Miller. Welcome to the show, Gary. We never confirmed that we were after Howe, yet released a communication to say the deal was a no-goer. Why don't they communicate where we are right now? I think it's a very difficult situation that we're in just now, because I don't think we want to end up with the old cream pie in our face again. We've already had a couple of knockbacks in the last few weeks, so I think the club are being very careful about what they're putting out. And then, obviously, we'll get to this, Declan, as you mentioned, there will be contractual reasons why the jersey was launched today. But for anyone looking at that, you're thinking the timing is absolutely shocking. Read your room. You're trying to sell us merchandise here. That's not what we want to talk about. So it's very difficult for the people who are in these particular positions, Declan. There's some very good people at Celtic, as you know. Yeah. You know some of them. But they've been put into a position by the club, by those in charge of the club, whereby it's very difficult for them even just to, on a day-to-day basis, put out a tweet. Because, JP, what's it like? Anything that goes out now is just met with a barrage. So I've got to say, and I'm not a big board sympathiser, absolutely not, but some of the people at the club are getting such a hard time, and, you know, they don't have the power to make any difference to that, do they?
No, and I had to laugh at the 20-minute Tim's shared the picture of his Milo Soro wearing the strip. And there's other pictures of him, but the picture that they chose, he's kind of got this expression on his face where he just looks like, oh, God, I can't even bother doing this. And they put a caption with it saying, is Milo Soro looking how we all feel right now? And it's so apt. I mean, it was the perfect snapshot of you know, right now. They just look like they would rather be anywhere else than launching a new strip, which, by the way, I do quite like, but I wish they wouldn't stop mucking about with the badge. Why can't you just keep the Celtic badge, you know? I mean, that's a minor gripe.
I do like the big crest, I've got to say, you know, just as a wee diversion, and you've got a jersey with a massive crest behind you. Yeah, I do like a big crest generally, but I'm a traditionalist, JP, so I get exactly what you're saying there. Yeah. They were using something similar on polo shirts back in Berham Kyle's time.
They were, yeah.
You know, unsurprisingly, Berham Kyle wore it well. You know, and it was like the yellow polos. I think there was a black one, maybe a white one. But it looked good on that. It looked good on the leisure wear. But when it comes to the kit, I just think,
oh yeah,
one crest. Stick to the one crest.
Aye, and sewn badge. You know, sewn
always.
Badge. Yeah, 100%.
Always embroidered. We're allowed to talk about the new kit. I mean, yes, we've done that. We don't want to labour it. I'm going to ask you, though, Declan, right? So on the point that Gary just made on Facebook, so out comes the announcement around the fact that Eddie Howe will not be coming to Celtic. Now, I'm looking at that situation because up to that point we know, and this has been confirmed as well, that Fergal Harkin had been in discussions with Celtic, right? So they had been looking at him. He's never fulfilled a director of football role in his professional career, but that was the role that was kind of being he was being earmarked for. Then the announcement comes out that we're not getting Eddie Howe, but the club were at pains to stress that he was given everything he wanted. He was to bring in his own team, going back to the point that JP was just talking about. He was bringing in his own team, and not just his assistant and his coach. He was choosing his director of football. He was given, not quite carte blanche, but not far off it. At that point, if the club has been going down two kind of routes of inquiry, if you like, or two points of interest, I think what's happened there is we've tripped ourselves up, because whatever Fergal Harkin has been assured of, perhaps that he was the only kind of gig in town in terms of the director of football, we've basically confirmed that he wasn't, with the announcement that Eddie Howe wasn't taking the job, even though we had given him all this kind of freedom. Do you think that was one of the big reasons why Harkin is now no longer part of the process?
Possibly could be. I mean, if you're getting strung along, getting told you're the man, you're going to get the job, and then you find out that wasn't the case, and you weren't first choice, I'm sure that would be something that would annoy people. Again, though, it said in that particular article, that Celtic had never actually, Celtic said that he was not first choice. He was interviewed, but he was not first choice for the role. So it begs the question of who is first choice for the role. But on that point with how, Paul, to allow a manager to pick the director of football or whatever isn't the right way this process should work. It should be the director of football that picks the manager in the instance, because we spoke multiple times in this podcast about modernising the football club, how we move forward, the new structure. To do that, you need to have different people in different levels of place. If one cog moves out the system, it just gets replaced very quickly and easily. So it should never have been the case that we were given Eddie Howe freedom to pick that.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy. And we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more. It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Director of football, that's bad. And if we did know months ago that the deal, we weren't getting complete, we weren't getting the complete thumbs up for them, we weren't getting assurances from them, I think we should have walked away from the deal then. We shouldn't have got to this point so far down the line, led us up the garden path and then just scuppered them at this point where on a Thursday afternoon, us three are going between Jersey's Big Shamrocks, an Australian coach and Yokohama Marinos and contractual obligations. It's crazy.
It is. Aye, if there's no contract on the table, then, you know, Celtic have been caught out before, you know, Declan, and we should know better. A club like Celtic should know better. What's your thoughts on it, JP, about the Harkin one? There was a feeling amongst a lot of Celtic fans that it was almost a shoo-in.
Oh, I mean, most people were talking about Helga Harkin, like he had his feet under the table and was actually making decisions. I guess the same people that, and myself included, that were all thinking that Eddie Howe was already doing things behind the scenes, identifying players, you know, speaking to current players to find out their you know, thoughts on staying or going or whatever. So I think a lot of people thought that Helga Harkin, you know, maybe because of his responsibilities with Manchester City, couldn't commit to join the Celtic, but therefore would still maybe be doing things behind the scenes. So, I mean, everybody and their dog thought that Fergal Harkin was a shoo-in to be in place. What you've got now is that you've got seemingly where I've identified Postecoglou. So then there's this situation, scenario that could come about whereby we appoint a director of football, having already appointed a coach. And we appointed a director of football. Those two guys have never met. And then you've got John Kennedy and Gavin Strachan in the dugout with a manager or coach that they've never met. Mm-hmm. That is completely insane to me. Like, absolutely mental. If that is what happens, who knows if that is what's happening or not. But if that is what happens, then I am not comfortable with that at all.
And it's not the first time the club's done it. I'm going to bring up the Wim Jansen example just in a second here, but there's some other comments coming through.
That ended well, didn't it? I know we won the league, but it didn't end well. We lost them in the summer because of the whole matchmaking exercise with Jock Brown and all the rest of it. And then, you know, we had to then rebuild and restart with Venglos, who wasn't a bad coach, but was probably the wrong guy at the wrong time. You know?
You're right. After Jansen, you know, you've got a season under Venglos, a season under Barnes-stroke Dalglish before O'Neill comes in. So the real concern I've got is go for the O'Neill appointment now. Because if you don't, you're going to have this two or three seasons where, you know, we could continually be trying to push on with the rebuild, JP. But if you don't have the right men in at the club, it's just not going to happen. Kevin Crawford, you know, says absolute shambles top to bottom. JK will be taking first day training in pre-season 100%. And Gary Ben J88 says the same. Kennedy will be the next Celtic manager. It brings back memories of speaking to people, Declan Leake, Simon Donnelly, Jackie McNamara, who are at training, in the training in the camp, and I could be wrong, but I think it was in the Netherlands, is being taken by Murdo McLeod. So Murdo McLeod's taking the training. This is pre-season 97-98, and Rangers are going for 10 in a row, and we're having to stop it. And Celtic have announced Wim Jansen, and the players don't know much about him, and they see him walking over to join them. So they can see him from wherever, the pavilion or the car park or wherever it is, walking over. And Simon Donnelly talks about the fact that he's walking over, he's wearing a horrific Celtic shell suit, and he's got and he's got a perm. And he comes over, and we all know how it works out. As you say, JP, we got the job done. But in terms of the dynamic, if that dynamic's not right, by the end of the season, it quite clearly wasn't right for various reasons. In particular, his relationship between himself and Jock Brown obviously wasn't a good one. But he left us, and he left us without warning, and he's gone. And it took a couple of seasons before we went and got the right man for the job in Martin O'Neill. Then the kind of revolution began properly.
We were up against a juiced-up Rangers side that were spending money like confetti, you know. Let's not forget, that is... I couldn't tell you how much money they spent at that time, but it was significant. They were going out and signing Arthur Newman, Dutch left-back, you know. I mean... The idea of a Scottish football club right now signing the first choice Dutch left back is preposterous. You know, there's no way that budgets would allow for that. Whereas
it's a good point. It's a good point, because when Rangers were going for the 10 and Celtic stopped them, what they did, they followed that up, JP, by appointing Dick Advocaat and spending £35 million. Now that's equivalent to £55 million in today's money. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be doing that. So, you know, but it shows you the scale of the impact of losing the 10 and what you have to do to try and regain it.
Yeah, but we also don't want to end up liquidated and, you know, starting again in the third division, because that's what happened to them ultimately as a result of that. So there's got to be a happy medium somewhere between, you know, spending, you know, ridiculous amounts of money and getting in a coach that is, you know, way overqualified to be in the Scottish Premier League. And let's face it, he was. I mean, again, it would be absurd for right now a Scottish club to go out and get the Dutch coach or the Dutch international manager. I mean, I wouldn't expect Celtic to get the Dutch international manager.
Where do you think at this point, with everything that's broken down, right? So it's quite clear we were all in on Eddie Howe. We were giving him everything. His every whim was being catered for. It looked as though we had kept the Fergal Harkin deal alive until such times as he's decided this isn't for me, but, you know, we'll never know the ins and outs of that one. But then we're going right down the line with Ange Postecoglou. Is it too late, JP, to say, wait a minute, you know, there are other candidates out there? And what level are we looking at here? Because as you say there, you can't go and bring someone in who's going to be demanding tens of millions of pounds, because we don't have that.
No.
We simply don't have it to spend in this pre-season. So what level are we looking at? Because it's a very difficult fan base at the moment to please. I mean, if we were to announce someone like, and I've seen the name popping up on the comments, Jack Ross or Steve Clark or someone of that ilk, how would that be received?
I think Jack Ross would not be a popular choice. There would be a lot of question marks over him and what he could do at this level. And with the scale of the job that's in front of him, he's not coming into a settled team. He's not coming into a settled club, really. The club is not settled right now, and it doesn't. I don't take any satisfaction from pointing that out, because I've never known it to be like this in my entire life, for it to be in such disarray and with so little time, as you can see, 47 days until the first Champions League qualifier, to be this dysfunctional at this point in time is staggering. So I think, you know, Jack Ross, not a great suggestion. Steve Clark, yes. As you said, I don't think Steve Clark would come anywhere near Celtic Park right now for his own reputation as much as anything else. I genuinely don't have an idea of where Celtic should be shopping, but then I'm not employed to do that job. So, yeah, I'm not sitting here trying to tell them what to do, but they should, in their position and their the money that they're earning in their position, I would expect them to come up with a better option, not a better option, but an easier option and a more accessible option.
A better fit. Absolutely. Now, in comes Strangelove the Doctor. Are you saying that Ange, having won everything he has domestically and internationally, isn't a qualified coach? With over 20 years in management, this is just bonkers spin city. Well, you know, it's all red tape at this moment in time. I think that my biggest concern is how long does the process take? Because if it is several weeks, you know, is that a couple of months? Because if so, we're bang into next season, massive season for the club. And if that's the case, as JP quite rightly said, who's doing the recruitment? Who's deciding that Ncham can leave early and sign for AEK Athens? Or, you know, who is making these decisions? It's massive.
Is that a thing?
Well, it's never been confirmed again, JP, by the club that he's been freed. But I would think that would be a bad decision to free a player who, you know, just last summer was interested in various clubs and the summer before that for sizeable fees. So you're writing off £4.5 million for a player. So these are the things that I'm considering. Who is actually responsible at this moment in time for the recruitment? But I'm going to go back to the point I made, Declan, and it ties in with quite a lot of the issues that the club have faced over the last few years. Is this motivated by the fact that they're part of the City Group and there are links between Peter Lowell and that group? And if so, then you're making a decision and you're closing your eyes to any other possibilities, when what we should be doing as a football club is making the right decision and bringing in the best possible candidate. And I'm going to link this in to signings. There was an interesting point made a few weeks back, and it was Lee Naylor, who I believe was on the Mark Wilson podcast, the Huddle podcast. And Lee Naylor, who is now an agent, was talking about the fact that players had been presented to Celtic and Celtic just wouldn't entertain them. Now, on the one hand, you could say, maybe they're not good enough, Lee. Maybe you're just trying to make your cut of the deal and the player's not good enough. But on the flip side of that, you know, the signing policy and the good, bad and ugly that we've seen coming into the club is something that's been a point of discussion time and time again on a Celtic State of Mind, and I'm sure elsewhere and amongst fan media. And, you know, it is an issue if, like the City Group connections that we have, if the club or an individual at the club who's dealing with the transfers is only interested in dealing with individual or a small collection of agents. And if that is the case, is that why we're continually bringing in players that the manager doesn't want to play? Because we know that Brendan Rodgers didn't sign Marian Sved or Marvin Compere, and we're spending all this millions and millions of pounds on these players, and there's been loads of others that the manager doesn't even want. You know, turning up at training, there's a new signing, and then you do your press conference, they ask you about the signing. You remember the press conference Rodgers gave, and he was quite clear that he knew nothing about the player. He'll be a good player for the club, I'm sure. So, you know, we've got a situation here where, very like the fact that we're putting all our eggs in the City Group basket, have we been putting all our eggs in the same kind of agent basket when it comes to players? And has that also been a factor in us losing out on various players down the years? I mean, there's a roll call now, isn't there? Ivan Toney's been the latest one, but we know that McGinn's on that list. Is it all down to us refusing to deal with specific agents, Dec? And if so, how detrimental has that been?
It could be. You know, I think Dudu Dahan's one of the favourites and one of the go-to men that we use quite a lot. Probably another list of guys that Peter Lowell can quickly pick the phone up to. Even if you look at January, in terms of, you know, we made it clear that our market, Nicky Hammond made it clear that our market was to see basically what was left in England and who we could pick up. We weren't making those phone calls and decisions. We were just probably going to the go-to. So there is a real possibility on that. With regards to the City Group, it did work to an extent under Rooney, in terms of what we brought in player-wise, in terms of your Jason Deniers, John Guidetti, Patrick Roberts. Obviously, we've then had Dedrick Boyata, Olivier Ncham, Daniel Arzani didn't work out. So you do have a scouting network there in place that you can access and use, which is handy, but it's just, it's you know, you could describe it as naive, and it's very narrow-minded to just go to the same and repeat and hope that it works every single time, because it might not always work. We've probably been lucky that we get guys like Denayer, Boyata, when Gaudette came in, he was a good striker for us for that first kind of 6 months period, and it did work. But then sometimes it won't work. And again, it's just, it's narrowing your market. There's so much out there. And again, maybe Ange Postecoglou might surprise us with untapped markets that we don't shop in terms of Asia, in terms of Australia. But, you know, I think it's just narrowing your market if that has been the case. And it's poor that that's what we've maybe been pursuing. Again, I don't know that, but if that has been what we're pursuing, it's not good to just always try and go at the same people and just expect to get the same outcome from it.
Absolutely agree with you. Because for me, JP, it's all about getting the best for Celtic. You get the best manager. It doesn't matter what group, you know, his name is under. You get the best players. It doesn't matter what agent he is represented by or agency. Now, Bromsgrove Boy, who comes in regularly on the show, so welcome back, says, so Peter Lowell steps down at the end of June, but thereafter he still does or does not pull all the strings. I think more than ever, it's pretty clear for all the reasons we've said and all the different links, we need to rip this up and start again, JP. We can't continually have that influence overbearing the new man in charge, Dominic Mackay, who we know is in the building, doesn't start officially till the 1st of July. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I don't feel for someone that's obviously earning a shed load of money and has got a great job. And an important job at Celtic, but what a job he's got in his hands right now. I mean, Dominic Mackay, if Peter Log does go in a few weeks' time and he's there on his own, I'm sure he's surrounded by people that he can ask for help. But I mean, it's sink or swim, isn't it? You know, he's got such a big task on his hands. So I know people are desperate for Peter Log to get away and be away from the club because they think that, you know, he's damaging and has damaged the club. But, you know, it is a little, on the flip side of that, hi Russell, it is, you've got to look at the fact that Dominic Mackay has never experienced being the CEO in a football club before. So this is all completely new to him. And although it's fresh and it's new and to a certain extent exciting, it is also a bit concerning, you know, that he is, you know, I don't want to call him a rookie. I wouldn't be disrespectful in that sense, but he's not experienced in this world as opposed to the last one. But if I just wanted to say something about the agents there when you were mentioning that, it dawned on me when we were off air a couple of weeks ago that the football industry and the agent business is so similar to the music industry. And that if you have a powerful agent in the music industry, and I'm not giving away any trade secrets here by telling you this, if you've got a powerful agent in the music industry who works with headline bands, he will start working with new bands and up-and-coming bands who nobody knows yet. And in order to get them ahead early on in their career and, you know, get them, you know, on festival bills and things like that, he will play the game with the promoters and be like, oh yeah, you can get, you know, Coldplay or whoever, but you need to take this band and I want them to play somewhere at your festival. So you need to find them a space. So it's clearly exactly the same with agents, where the agents will phone up and be like, oh yeah, I've got this guy. I mean, it was even said that the Ibrahim deal? Or who was the centre half, the Israeli centre half? Was it Rami Gershon, right? Apparently, Peter Law said, oh, we need to get this guy out of his, we need to help the agent out to get this guy out of his country. He's having some bother or whatever, and he needs a move. And that's how he ended up at Celtic, rather than it being like the player's been identified for his footballing prowess and, you know, fitting into the team and the squad, etc. It was just like, oh, this guy needs to get out of where he is, and we're going to help him out. You know, that helping an agent out. And there's far too much of that goes on. And it does go on a lot in the music industry. And you end up with bands playing to nobody because they have a powerful agent. And sometimes those bands go on to become hugely successful. But it's a lottery. You know, sometimes you'll never hear of them again. You know, but you'll have lost a lot of money on them because you're appeasing an agent. And it's the same exact thing with football players. Like, you know, how many players have we written off? And, you know, I mean, sometimes we've been lucky to get money back for them, but then other times they just disappear out the back door and it's like, oh yeah, they're away, played like a handful of games for us, didn't score any goals. Cheers.
Well, the thing with that, JP, because it is a good insight, is what I hear a lot when I bring up the transfer record is, but look at all the good ones we've had, or there's no exact science to it, you're always going to be buying bad players. But there just seems to be too many millions of pounds, you know, just thrown into a black hole with Celtic. If you were to look at the last 18 years under Peter Lowell's tenure, if you like, or during that tenure, there's been so many examples of this where how many of them have played under 50 games, let's say, right? And we've spent £2.5-3 million on these players, plus all the wages that comes with it. So it is something that I'm hoping with the new regime changes, buy the best players that are available to Celtic. And that's, you know, all the other political nonsense, jumping through hoops, preferential agents, all that stuff. No. Yeah, then that needs torn up and we need to start again with that. Now, we are in that kind of period, Declan, where we're entering the Euros. That's where we're going to be seeing all the action coming in. Last night was the first kind of warm-up game for Scotland. Pretty impressive contingent of Celtic players in that team, or ex-Celts. I mean, you just have to look at the midfield. Turnbull, McGregor and Armstrong. Christie and Dykes up front. Obviously, Dykes has never played for Celtic. Forrest, Hendry, it's Tierney, Robertson once at Celtic, Gordon. Unbelievable when you look at that, the Celtic contingent last night. What did you take away from that? Because my biggest takeaway from the game was Jack Hendry, I've got to say. And I want to talk a wee bit about Jack Hendry. But also, Craig Gordon.
Well, the goal's an absolute peach. He basically tackles Stuart Armstrong to get him out of the way and absolutely bangs it past Tim Krul. He certainly worked in his shooting since we last probably saw him in a green and white jersey. Looked quite comfortable in terms of, you know, it is a position that we're going to be short in. You're starting to bring me into the idea that he might be coming back and actually playing for us. Craig Gordon, again, a lot of good saves last night. Maybe just shows you what we've been missing this season. But once again, it's one of those situations that, you know, spend £5 million in the Greek internationalist and it's not worked out at all, and he's been completely thrown under the bus. And again, possibly a target in the summer, Kevin Nisbet, really good goal, great ball across the box from Andy Robertson, and really tidy finish. So a lot of positives last night. Thought it was a good performance. We were unlucky probably not to win the game, but we'll look forward to Luxembourg and getting a good start, hopefully against the Czech Republic, just short of 2 weeks.
See, when you look at that, Declan, again, Gordon, you know, it's all great with hindsight. I think we raised our concerns at the time, you know, allowing Gordon to go and probably allowing him to go too early. Again, because we thought we had the Fraser Foster deal done and it wasn't done. You're looking at a player like Nisbet, who you've mentioned, Dykes previously, domestic players that a lot of Celtic fans think aren't Celtic class. Is it time to say, well, perhaps they are?
Possibly. You know, again, this is the first time a Scotland team's been at a major finals in 23 years, right? 23 years. So, you know, they've got a Scotland squad that are performing at a good level, they're at a good stage, and it shows you that in the domestic game and what's there, that there is good players, so you shouldn't just turn your nose up at them, you know, and they're going out there and showing. Even a guy like Stephen O'Donnell, I'm not saying go out and sign Stephen O'Donnell, but he puts in a really good shift for Scotland. And what I've seen this season in terms of Frimpong, Elhamid, hardly featured, and then John Joe Kenny, would Stephen O'Donnell really been any worse than any of those three players? Probably not. So it just shows you that your domestic game, there is good enough players in it from Scotland that can perform in a big level that we probably have in times previous just kind of turned our nose up at.
Yeah, overlooked. And even if you go further back, you're looking at Maurice Boyer and Jeremy Toljan to add to your right back list there, Declan. Now, we had on the show the Belgian football podcast, JP, who were trying to give us the insight into the situation regarding Jack Hendry. They told us that Ostend had that buyout clause, but that expired on the 31st of May. So unless they've bought him for the £2 million that was the deal, he's still a Celtic player. So I've seen reports online saying that the plan is they've actually sparked that clause. They're buying Jack Hendry for £2 million, but they've already got a new team lined up for him. They're going to make a profit on him immediately, overnight. So they're going to buy him to sell him. So Celtic, surely, that's the worst of three options to allow him to go to Belgium, right? Mm. Surely the other two options are you keep him because he's quite clearly improved, or you bring him in to do what the Belgian side were going to do, and you make a profit on him rather than let him go for £2 million. What's your thoughts here? I think physically it looks as though he's worked a lot on the physical aspect of his game. I remember back to Ryan Christie when he went to Aberdeen, came back, looked as though he put about a stone and a half on in muscle. And I see a bit of that with Hendry as well. Is it too little too late, do you think? Is his Celtic career definitely over?
I hope not. I was never one of these people, and I'm not just being revisionist here, I was never one of these people that was writing off Jack Hendry. I really don't think he got a fair crack of the whip at Celtic. I go back to a point that I made when I got into a bit of a Twitter spat with one of the 20 Minute Tims guys.
Twitter spats are good fun, eh?
Oh, they're great fun,
especially if they last for 72 hours. They're tremendous.
But I was digging up. I looked into it and I found out.
Stop laughing, Dick, in the back.
He was involved with three defeats that were costly defeats for Celtic. And I think that psychologically, in the eyes of the Celtic support in general, that he is sort of connected to those three defeats that happened in a row. It was a European game. It was a cup.
It was Athens.
I think it was Utrecht. I honestly can't remember now. I need to look back at it. But there was three games anyway. It was like a Sunday, a Thursday, and then another Sunday. And we lost them all. I'm pretty sure we lost them all. And he got you know, battered for that. But I mean, it's a team game. It wasn't Jack Hendry's fault that we lost those games. You know, the goals weren't even down to him. So I would genuinely love to, I hope that's not the case with regards to them buying him and then, you know, lining him up for a 10 million move to Leeds or Burnley or whoever like that. I mean, if he has been sold, surely to God, in amongst the happy birthdays, Celtic would have announced Jack Hendry has been sold to Ostend. We wish him all the best. Thanks for your efforts, blah, blah, blah. So it can be the case that he's gone. It surely can be. What are they just going to do in a couple of days? Go, oh, by the way, Jack Hendry's away. We forgot to tell you.
Why as a club would you put yourself in that position when you know that he's going to the Euros and all it takes is three good performances from any of the Celts that are on the kind of fence in terms of Ryan Christie being another one, obviously, that might leave. And that puts a massive difference, a massive view, if you like, on the transfer fee. If you go and you perform at that level and you perform well, you imagine, and I'm going to get shot down for this, but you imagine Jack Hendry starring against England. You know, and some of these clubs that you've mentioned there who are reportedly interested, you know, if you get a bidding war with a couple of them, then you properly do cash in. But as I say, I think of the three options we've got with Hendry, the worst one is, you know, that buyout clause from Ostend. We don't know the ins and outs of the deal, but unless it's actually been taken by the 31st of May, according to the Belgian Football Podcast, he's still a Celtic player and we can negotiate elsewhere. So we'll see how that one develops.
I think would help as well, if Jack Hendry is to come back to Celtic, I think what would help is the fact that he's not going to come immediately back to playing in front of a full Celtic Park, unfortunately. I would far rather that was the case. I just can't even believe we've not been at a game since March last year. But I think that would maybe help, because if he comes back and starts keeps at the same sort of level that he's been playing in Belgium, then by the time it is a full house again, the fans will be like, well, we've seen him been playing well in a Celtic shirt, and, you know, he gets an easier ride of it, you would hope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, when we look at last week, we spoke about, you know, going back in time and having a look at the 27th of May, and the game that I recalled was the Airdrie Cup final, where thankfully I didn't get lifted for the night. And the one that Declan was looking at was the Invincibles, you know, the Scottish Cup final game with Rogic scoring at the end. Quite prophetic, actually, talking about an Australian last week, Declan. Well, this week I'm looking at the fact that Amy Canavan did a brilliant interview with Paul Elliott last week. If you've not had a chance to watch that, check it out on our YouTube channel. Amy is the soccer supernova, and she's our dedicated chat show. She speaks to footballers from all over Europe in relation to their careers, and she's very good at it. So she speaks to Paul Elliott last week, and it reminded me of that era at Celtic, and it reminded me of a player that we were very close. We made a few inquiries in relation to bringing him in to match him up and pair him up, JP, with Paul Elliott, and that player was Paul McGrath. Right, so when you look at Paul Elliott's career and the timeline, so Paul Elliott comes into Celtic in 1989 for the 89-90 season. Now that's incredible when you think that, right, we won a double in 87-88 under Big Caesar, right? And we didn't kick on the following season, but we did win the Scottish Cup and we denied Rangers a treble, 88-89. The following season, we bring in Paul Elliott. Paul Elliott, who in my Celtic supporting life, he's actually in my top 11.
From Pisa, wasn't it?
I brought him in from Pisa for something like 600 grand, right? And Billy McNeil tried to sign Paul McGrath to marry him up with Paul Elliott. And it was the story was told to me by Tom Grant, former director of Celtic Football Club, who actually travelled down with Billy McNeil to do the deal. They actually travelled down to do the deal. That's how close it was. Paul Elliott was in the building. I know we say that now about Ivan Toney and all that. He came up to Celtic Park and visited Celtic Park.
Wait, Paul McGrath was in the building?
Paul McGrath, right. Right, sorry, okay. I said Paul Elliott. And that was the plan. So I know Kevin Graham loves his parallel universes. Can you imagine you know, an alternative career where Paul McGrath does sign for Celtic in 1989? Everything's different. Everything is absolutely different at that stage. Marry him up with Paul Elliott. McGrath and Elliott at the back. Dream team.
Aye, machines. Absolute machines. That would have been... that would have been
blissful.
Class.
Aye, absolutely.
But they made a difference to the next couple of seasons, I'm sure. Well, you'd like to think so anyway.
I know. And you know, in five or six... I wouldn't have made them worse, that's for sure. In 5 or 6 years, we might be looking back and saying, what if we had got Eddie Howe? Who knows? Who knows? There's plenty of other conversations like that. But thanks very much for taking part once again on the Thursday Bulletin. I'm pretty sure in the next 7 days, when we get down to the 4-0 JP, which for myself is a distant memory, then we'll be speaking hopefully about more positive aspects of Celtic Football Club. Thanks for everybody getting involved via YouTube, Facebook and Twitter. Thank you to Declan McConville and JP Mason for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.